Our next speaker is Sky Wills, who's a colleague of Phil's, measuring and scaling dynamic soil properties.
So we're going to use these soil systems, hopefully, to scale dynamic soil properties. So soil change, how do we measure soil change? We can do it in one spot. We can look at one spot over time, but then we have to figure out where those results apply. And so that's what I'm going to try to talk about. I'm going to go through my slides pretty quickly, so if there's more information on them, probably that I'm going to talk about. But I'm going to start with a general overview of what soil survey is and what the scales involved are. And then we'll talk a little bit about how we move into the next phase of soil survey and what we have to change in order to get the most information and do value-added work. So soil surveys are planned and executed on political units. It's typically counties, sometimes tribal areas, national parks, those sorts of things. The order or the spatial scale and purpose, predominant land use, determine both map unit and component design. And that's important when we think about what a soil survey means, what the soil looks like on a map. So component, I mean an individual soil concept. We usually think of this as like a soil series or soil series phase. Map units, those are the things you actually draw a line around on a map, an aerial photo, whatever you're representing it as. That's the map unit. So if you're mapping a new area, you might just separate out, just like Phil and Craig have discussed, where you're drawing lines around boundaries. Maybe you're making them into different raster classifications, but in some way you're separating them out into things that are substantially different. However, on this map, I'm going to point out, I think I can do this with a mouse, that while there may be differences, and you may see two different soils very close together, you may not be able to map those out. So sometimes when we're thinking about and using soil maps, we have to remember that there can be multiple soils, multiple components, multiple things put into that map unit. And what we intend to use that map for determines a lot of what the soil scientist, what the mapper is going to determine is important enough to map out or not. So type of map units, typically if we think about in the east where things are mapped in high detail, we like consociations. We think it's one soil series, most everything in this map unit is the same type of soil. Associations actually might have a repeating predictable pattern. And complexes are ones where you can't really figure out what the pattern is at the scale you're mapping. And so what these map units are is going to have a big difference for how we monitor and measure soil change. Because if we aren't really comparing the same soil, the same map unit may not be an appropriate scale to do this on. So there are different types of components. So I said usually we think of these as soil series. They're not always. They can be different units. They can be different combinations of things. So when using and developing soil maps, we really have to think about what kind of things it is are that we're putting into these map units. So soil series components, those are the ones we most commonly use. Conceptual scales within soil taxonomy, right? Each soil series, if you look up the official series description, it'll give you a range of properties and some characteristics of what you can expect to find. Sometimes it's pretty hard to find exactly what would be listed in official soils description. Sometimes they're really broad and you could find a whole range of stuff that would fit that. So it depends a lot on how the individual soil is set up, how it was defined, how people conceptualize it. So in a lot of parts of the country, you'll use a phase to distinguish certain components from one another. So you might have a soil series with a sandy surface versus a loamy sand surface or something like that. So soil survey design is a big part of this process, right? We don't go out and we can't dig a hole everywhere. That would be impossible. It would be fun, but it would be impossible, right? So we have to think about how, like Phil was talking about, your Catena concept, your conceptual model that you're using to map a landscape. That is the underlying principle of soil survey and soil mapping. But how the things are conceptualized, the extent, the scale, the really just how much information is loaded into those models depends on where you are in space, land use, and in time. So, for instance, in rangeland, a lot in western areas, soil maps are not that intensive. in cropland areas, sometimes they are very intensive. Iowa, it's nuts. They're just map units, I mean, little dots, and it's crazy. So it's difficult to compare. You're not really comparing apples to apples. It's more apples to oranges. They're fruits. They're the same thing, but they're not, you know, they don't taste the same. So there's the difference. So the knowledge of the soil-landscape relationship that you're looking at, if you're doing a soil change study, you're evaluating properties that change with land use and management, some knowledge about how that soil conceptual unit came from is really important. So I don't know if you guys have seen this. This is straight out of the soil survey manual. There are different orders of intensity for soil survey mapping. So first order, that would be if you're siting like a septic system and you need exactly the right type of soil and exactly a known location, all the way up to fifth order, which is huge regional planning. You know, you might have an order map or something. So I'm going to give you an example of two things that we often put together. That's order two and order three mapping. We often put them together and then we treat them as the same product, even though they're really not. So order three example, low intensity rangeland. We usually have broad soil concepts. And the example I'm going to show, we have loess, bedrock, and a colluvium kind of place. These aren't really highly defined. The OSDs, the official series descriptions for these particular soils, are not really specific. They're pretty broad in their definition, and as they should be. This fits the need of the landowners and land users. They don't need to know really specific information about how the soil changes from, say, a slight depression on the upland to the shoulder position, because it doesn't change that much. It changes a little bit, and it meets their needs. The order two example, however, in some place like Iowa, where they have high intensity use, they might have just a slight difference in the amount of, say, water, like Phil was talking about, that is retained in the rooting zone. But for crop production, that's a big deal, and we want to know about it. So in this instance, this is a really well-understood landscape. This is in Iowa. There happened to be, like, 50 million podologists with the vicinity, so they really know this landscape well, so they drew a whole bunch of lines. They know what this stuff is. Now, there may be just as much variability in this stuff in Wyoming, but they probably haven't had the resources to look at it. Maybe they don't. Nobody is putting up the money to do that, I should say. So, traditional soil survey, what we would do is take those individual soil components, which I've already told you occur at different scales and different conceptual thoughts. We would take those head-on observations and we'd have one description that represents that component. And then we might do some transects and other types of observations to see how those properties vary across components and things like that. As far as the actual PEDON data and lab sampling, the idea is the representative PEDON. We want to get the central concept that tells us exactly what we think the heart of that soil component is. And I will also tell you that there are some components that don't have a very good representative PEDON with lab data, and sometimes the information is drawn from other places. So that's something to think about when using traditional soil survey. It's also something to think about when we try to expand from our traditional soil survey products and then into something that we can talk about soil change and dynamic soil properties from. So, dynamic soil properties, since I've used that word a couple of times, are properties that change with land use and management. And so that's how, a soil survey, we're trying to get at soil change. Now, well, I heard in the wild lecture the mention of boutique studies. So we can't do that. We can't go look at one forest or one range site over an extended period of time. We've got to try to cover the entire landscape. And so we're focusing on landscape scale changes that happen over the human time scale. And we have a soil change guide that's on the web if you're interested in looking at it. So soil survey can document those properties that change. We're really interested, especially with our new soil health division, in documenting things that are related to crop management as well as big scale land use changes. Our current program calls for multi-scale replication, We realize that there's a lot of soil variability out there, and when you change things, you change the management, you just up the amount of variability probably tenfold. So the results, we know more information than we typically know. We don't just have a central pattern. We know what the central tendency is. We know what the range and variation of properties are. But what we don't know is we don't really know what it applies to all that well. So the current guidance calls for sampling an individual soil series or component. So if I go out and I take 25 samples from one soil component, what else does that apply to? Because there's a lot of soil. There's like 22,000 soil series. We're not going to be able to document what is changing on each one of those soil series. We have to have some sort of conceptual model in order to scale up and scale down. So I'm proposing a hierarchy that's based on a lot of what Phil talked about before me, that's based on MLRAs, major land resource areas, and regions, subunits within that. They may be pre-sip zones, they may be crop management zones, land resource units, some sort of characteristic catena, landmark catena, whatever we end up calling them, something that describes the soil system that we should be looking at. And then within those, they're going to have I call them landscape elements, or I don't know. We don't really have the terminology yet, but the idea is, like Phil showed the depressional area, there are some features within that, say the two upland soils he showed, that will act in essentially the same way. So perhaps we don't need to document change on each one of those little components. We can actually do one of them and expect the results to apply to the other one. So there's a little thing here, Chris will probably recognize that. Ecological site happen to do a good job of grouping these landscape elements together. So we may want to, We may want to use the ecological site concepts that people are developing to start to help us group soils together into like things that respond in similar manner. So the selection of units for DST measurement should take both the design of the soil survey, you know, how detailed were those components, how representative are they of the landscape, and it should take into account what we want to use it for when we're done. So this is just an example of a study we've done where we've separated a similar landscape to Phil's, but this is up in Minnesota, where we have several soils. The relief on this is like 5 meters or something. It's not very, you know. But it's a prairie pothole system. And so maybe instead of having 6 units, we thought we could at least get away with 3 because we have depressional area, we have the rim area, and we have the upland area. So if we sample dynamic soil properties in each of those, hopefully we can say something about all of them. So soil surveys, they're designed in a lot of different ways. We need to keep that in mind. Local factors play a big role in how those were designed. And so in order to select places for study and to extrapolate our studies, we're going to have some kind of hierarchical framework to move up and down, or we won't get to the full coverage, and we won't be able to make really big statements about how soils are changing and how soils are affected by land use and management. So with that, two pretty pictures. Thanks. And any questions? Yes, and that's actually something we don't have a good conceptual framework for that either, for how to document when it's changed so much that it's not the same soil. We recognize it happens, but we need more conceptual work on how to convey that, definitely. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Skye.